We're floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Welcome to the Wingman Show. I'm Drew Brown. We're here to inspire, entertain, and learn so we can all grow. Happiness and serenity are the key. My friend, my wingman, my main man, I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Paul Thompson. Hey, Paul.
Good morning, Mr. Drew. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard from the one and only Drew Brown, Dark Gable, the American Dream. He's the man, the myth, the legend. He's the pilot's pilot, the role model's role model, and most importantly, his royal fullness. Thank you for listening to the podcast, looking at the podcast. And if you could, please remember to like, share, and subscribe. If you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button. We would appreciate it. I'm doing very good this morning, Mr. Drew. How are you?
I'm doing great. You ready to start this show?
I'm ready.
All right, well, check this out.
Let me tell you the story of what happened last weekend. All my kids came, thank God. They came from Tampa. They came from New Orleans. My grandchild came. My ex-wife even came. And they were coming because we were going to have a big party for Memorial Day, a pool party that you and Kim came to. And we had all had a great time. There was a lot of good people here. But before you guys came, what happened was the dogs all of a sudden left. I couldn't find the dogs. And so I looked for these dogs and kept looking. And I noticed that the three of them were sitting around something in the woods. And they were sitting around a baby fawn. I haven't ever seen something like this. A real little baby fawn. It was so cute. I picked it up. I brought it back to the house. Everybody was excited. It couldn't walk. And I needed to know what to do. My instinct wanted to keep it, raise it in a Great Dane cage that I have, and raise it as Bambi. But the truth is, I Googled it, I researched it, and it says to put it back, because usually deers don't leave their children. If you find them alone, make sure you put them back because the mother got scared off or went for food or something. Okay. So that's what I did. I put it back. I really didn't want to. My daughter didn't want me to. And this is the attorney now. She didn't want me to because she's like me. We're real animal lovers, real. I have a dead frog from Taryn that was dried up when she was 5 years old and she cried over. And I actually kept this little thing. It's like just like a little piece of cardboard. Anyway, sure. Okay. My daughter really loves animals and so do I. I put it back and I didn't want to go check on it the rest of the day, to be honest with you. But that night it started to rain and town started, it was real dark, raining. Go check on it. Go check on it. And I said, no, town, let just nature take its, let it be. Well, the next day, believe it or not, you and I were in a meeting and Taryn actually just broke in the office and said, Daddy, you killed the deer.
I remember she said something. I couldn't tell what it was.
Yeah, she was very.
She said, you killed it. I didn't hear that.
Well, she did. And sometimes she says things just right off the cuff. But anyway, what happened is she went out to look for the deer and its back legs were gone, chewed off. The farm was dead. Obviously, coyotes got it.
Mm.
I felt like hell. It really bothered me really bad. And everybody that I know that I told this story to said that I did the right thing. And I know I did the right thing. It's just, I just felt horrible. So there's a good part of this story. And that's the only reason I'm telling this story. Yesterday, I was cutting the grass. I got my zero turn. And, you know, I have like 20 acres. So I have this big zero turn. And I go
what's
in
a,
the...
What's a zero turn?
Is like a big lawnmower, the commercial lawnmowers that can like turn on a dime. They don't have a steering wheel. They have two handles that you manipulate up and down, back and forth.
Okay, the ones you see like on the interstate that they use? And
correct.
Okay.
And guess what? If you watch the show on YouTube, I'll have pictures up of most of the things we talk about. So, you know, you don't only have to listen to it on the podcast. And if you do listen to it on the podcast, please like, share, subscribe. That really helps us out. The Wingman Show needs your support. I was cutting my grass and I come next to a tree and right there, and this thing is loud, right there is a baby fawn, the exact same size. It looks exactly like it. And when it saw me, it was startled and started and just took off. I mean, beautifully ran.
Yeah, it knew your reputation.
No. Oh, Paul, why would you think like that? That's a horrible way for your brain to work. Don't let your brain work like that.
Okay.
What it was a sign from Shorty. That was God letting me know I did the right thing. And also, the deer that I brought back was the same size, and it couldn't walk. And that's maybe why the mother left it. Nature took and did what it had to do. Anyway, the thought was that it was a good thing. I got a sign that everything was okay. I haven't ever seen two fawns, and I've been here 10 years. So anyway, that's that story. Tell me what you think about Naomi Osaka, and she doesn't want to talk to the press.
Yeah, so she suffers from clinical depression, or she's had bouts of depression. I think it goes to something else. You remember Marshawn Lynch? He played for the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes.
And he had this thing. He didn't want to talk to the press either, but they would fine him so much, he decided to. But his press conferences were always the same. They would ask him questions, and his answer to every question was the same. Marshawn, what do you think about blah, blah, blah? He would say, I'm here because I don't want to get fined. You know, Marshawn, what are you going to eat for Thanksgiving? I'm here because I don't want to get fined. Marshawn, what's the meaning of life? I'm here because he kept doing that every time, and he said it easier than I'm saying it.
He made him a lot of money, Paul.
Oh, he made him a lot of money, but he had to be there physically. I guess she has to be there physically, but maybe that's too much for her. She could say something like that, but I think what it is that there's a desire for the people who are reporters to hit them with gotchas. They want a gotcha question. They want something. They want to build the people up. They want to tear them down. They want to be the one to do it, to establish street cred, so to speak, in that business.
They want to crack that shield.
Yeah, something I heard Venus Williams say. Was it Venus Williams or Serena? I think it was Venus Williams. How she dealt with it. And she basically said that I learned to deal with it early on, but it didn't bother me that much because everybody asking the question couldn't play as well as me. You could never play as well as me, no matter what you did. I was cold now. And I thought about that. And I extended it to other sports, everything, you know, this fighting and this and that. Because a lot of the people seem to be, they're not Charles Barkley types. They're not ex-athletes. Most of them are, you know, they did something in journalism and know all the facts, like a Marv Albert guy, you know, who's my favorite announcer.
Excellent.
He's an excellent announcer. I mean, the voice of the Knicks, I listened to him on the radio before we had TV, actually.
Yeah, but you're getting too close to the Knicks right now, and I'd rather not talk about that.
Okay, I watched the game last night. We won't get to that. Anyway, you know, the thing is that, you know, there's a difference between Marv Albert and Larry Holmes or Mike Tyson or an athlete. So by not being available to these people who make their living on ginning up stuff, that kind of hurts them. But she, you know, some of them, they just don't care. She's at the point, though, she's the number one tennis player in the world. Okay, they fired $15,000, which is about, I calculated it, that would be 0.03% of her winnings.
She's the highest paid female athlete in the world.
Okay. Basically the equivalent of me buying a strawberry.
About two strokes with the racket.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it's... You know, and then she's got a...
Okay, now, let's take the other side, Paul.
Okay.
The other side is that this person does make money from the public. People buy tickets. People are interested. The only reason she makes money is because of fans. And fans pay these athletes money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a... I grew up with Ali, right? So he loved the press. Loved it. He looked for them because he loved bantering with them. My daughter went to school with, who's that great football player from Texas?
Yeah, I know you're talking about, he went to Miami.
Yes.
I'll think of the name in a second. Go ahead. Yes. Ricky Williams?
Ricky Williams. Yeah. My daughter went to school and was friends with Ricky Williams, the Heisman Trophy winner. And Ricky Williams actually took medicines because he was so shy. He mm-hmm. didn't understand at all why one day he could walk in the mall and the next day he could not. And it's wow. And he said, only because I can run and carry a football. It didn't get to him why he became famous. And he couldn't, he didn't like it and didn't want to be famous. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, being growing up around somebody who was very, very famous, being famous sucks. Being famous is not what it's all kicked up to be. Everybody thinks it's fun, but it's not. There's a lot of pressure. Like we were talking about the other day, you know, being the queen, do you realize people don't even talk about her going to the bathroom? Does she ever take off her gloves? Does she ever scratch? You know, she's in a fishbowl 24/7. So is Naomi. And certain people aren't able to handle that. Which, how about this? Most people wouldn't be able to handle it because all of us have flaws. And when somebody keeps asking you questions, and she should just answer like a politician does. You ever hear our politicians on news programs?
Yes.
You ask them about the water problem, and they talk about the rainforest.
Yeah, they answer the question.
They talk about whatever they want to. They actually get their agenda out with your question. Oh, you want to know about violence in the streets? Well, you see, the tax problem of the upper class really helps everybody. Do you understand? They have to care less what you ask them. These reporters now, they get points for making people cry. They get points for really for breaking open somebody who seemed to be perfect. And that's what she doesn't want, because she's probably a very honest young lady. And when they ask her a question, she wants to answer it. But why are you keep digging on bad stuff? They're not talking about how great she is. They're talking about how it felt that she got booed when she beat Serena. Who the hell wants to hear that?
Right.
But do you think that she's obligated is, I guess, the question, because contractually she did get fined. And what she did is pull out. So they're going to have a choice. You know, she might say, I'll come to the U.S. Open, but I'm not doing media sessions. And the U.S. Open is going to have to make a choice of getting the number one woman tennis player on the circuit or sticking with the media thing.
Or not the media, or some kind of a compromise. Maybe she doesn't want to talk 10 times. Maybe she can talk for 6 minutes, 4 minutes.
Paul, you know, our vice president, Ms. Kamala Harris, Madam Kamala Harris, she's now in charge of a movement with the federal government. Can you please explain to me and our listeners and viewers about this crazy, you know, they just, all the Democrats just walked out in Texas. All these states are really changing their laws to make it harder for Black people to vote. Just say it. I don't know what you want to say. I have an answer for it, but I really want to hear yours because it's probably so much better than mine.
Well, I don't know if that's true, but it seems as though there is a concern about just democracy in general and whether it should be a multiracial democratic society. I think that's what it comes to. I don't think the answer is definitely no. It's definitely not yes. But I think that the powers that be really don't know which way to go. As we talk about democracy and being a republic, you know, we talk about democracy, you're really talking about the majority rule. Majority rule, kind of one man, one vote. When we talk about being a republic, kind of the same thing, but the republic really in the definition, it really talks about representation. So it's kind of the same thing, but you get to pick your representatives, and that's where the voting comes in. So if you limit a certain population from not participating, you don't really have a true democracy. They talk about voting rights. You know, they still talk about the, you know, the reestablishing Voting Rights Act. That went down when I was in the fifth grade. I mean, we're cycling backwards. We're going backwards. We're going backwards to when I just got old enough to have a key and go to stay at home by myself. So in the Civil Rights Act of 64, that was, you know, when I just turned 10. And we're talking about the same things, you know, in the third or fourth quarter of our lives.
Yep.
Which is bad.
This is terrible. Texas actually passed a law where it's easier for a judge to overturn an election. How about that one? They gave them the power to overturn the majority rules if they feel that there's any kind of fraudulent voting. That means if one person fraudulently voted, they have the power to maybe turn around the election.
Now, is that a local election or any election?
I don't know. I didn't get that deep into it. It's so stupid. And if the federal government changes the Voting Rights Act again, none of those laws will matter again.
Right.
So we need a federal thing. But there's another side to this coin. Ever since you and I had the right to vote, voting has not ever been a problem. Ever. Not once. Is that correct?
No one bothered me. I remember I voted in the first presidential election when 18-year-olds could vote, and I had just turned 18.
And you were proud to do it?
Yeah, and it was no problem. Just as I registered for the Selective Service, you know, before I was 18 for the draft. That's how old I am.
Yeah, I missed it by 1 year.
Oh, really? Yeah, 1 year. Yeah, 1 year.
The draft.
I had a draft number. I think it was 269 or something like that.
If we want to really make a change, we need to go out here and educate the people that they're trying to stop. We need to go out here in mass and make sure they really now do vote. The people who are trying to hold on to this power realize racists really aren't being born. These new kids, these millennials don't care about sex and race. First of all, race is stupid because there's one race, human race, and maybe they realize that. Maybe they just realized that. But I know how to fight this other than our vice president making sure that we get a federal change in the laws. We, as the people, need to go out there and next time there's an election, go get these people registered and make sure they vote. We can win. It just takes a little effort. That's my little 2 cents on it.
And I think in Georgia, they enact a statute where you can't give water or any kind of aid or something bizarre. I think, yeah, it was,
and you know what? They changed that. They said, okay, now you can give water.
Come on. But I think what that points to is beyond the crazy restriction that just like popped up out of nowhere is an honest assessment of what is it that you're really afraid of. An honest discussion, not calling people names. See, what you do, we start throwing slurs around and da-da-da-da. You know, one-upsmanship, like, stand-up comedy, but more vicious and real. But what is it that you're really, upset with? Things have changed. Some things have changed. A lot of things are changing. A lot of things are not changing at all. They've always been this way. They're just finding out about it.
The only thing that won't change is change. I will say it again. The only thing that won't change is change. Somebody told me this a long time ago, and it's true. Everything you know today will change.
Right, right.
And this is something, the 11 facts of life, is that we have a saying that the rules change with the game. In other words, when you're playing basketball, it's different than playing baseball. So you have to have different rules. So if you go to a new job, nobody cares about what you did in your last job. And you know what? Side note, Paul, we talked about this real quick. How do you deal with assholes? Because you and I had the greatest job in the world. I flew with somebody in the Navy right next to me. And the missions that we did, for some reason, there were no assholes right next to me. Because at night, coming aboard the aircraft carrier, you just didn't have room for being an asshole. But we then went to an airline and there are people who are just not nice. And they can make a trip, a weekend to Paris, the most miserable weekend you can have if you had a bad captain, the most miserable. Or it could be you, myself, and Keith when you were the captain. And I had the greatest 4 or 5 days of my life going to Paris. So here's the question. How do you, because you have done it a lot. Mm-hmm. You probably do it better than me because I'm a little bit more aggressive. How do you deal with assholes? And I will end it. Why does God make assholes? So you know who the nice people are.
I was going to say that. That's exactly. Actually, they make you appreciate good people. And the reality is, I encountered, if I look at it, not that many. A few. I mean, there's a few stand out. And that's a good thing, actually. There's a few that stand out. Most don't really count. And it depends on really what your position is, what your position is relative to them. In a situation where they are in a position that's senior to you, then you got a problem. because stuff rolls downhill. If it's the other way around, it's like, well, who cares? You got to deal with it. That's one of the benefits of being in charge. But, you know, typically if you're, you know, in a bad situation, some things you just have to deal with. It's not fair. There's no requirement that typically anyone be nice. The way the airlines have kind of gotten around that when they've got like no nutcases or whatever. A lot of times I've flown with people who are probably who clearly had mental problems. They clearly had mental problems. Strangely enough, they tended to be very good pilots. They tended to be very good pilots. Not always, 95%. I mean, well above average, and it's a strange dichotomy, you know, just like maybe the personality of certain championship athletes. They're well-known records forever, but nobody really wanted to hang with them. Okay, that's the way it goes.
How do you deal with them, Paul?
How do you deal with them? Well, you've got to ignore them to the point that you can. In the aviation business, if it's something becomes unsafe, that becomes a buzzword. And now it's transformed to a different level. Initially, one time the captain said was law, period. Well, you know, and in subsequent investigations found the captain was wrong. People were getting killed. Property was damaged. Insurance rates were going through the roof. We're going to go out of business. And then when they came up with CRM, essentially, that was a corporate decision. You know, cockpit resource management. Basically, you've got to get the opinions of others. You know, one person ultimately makes the decision. But essentially, if you screw up real bad and everyone around you is telling you what you should have done and you didn't do it because you knew everything, we got it on tape, it comes to you. So the technology is in that system. It's kind of used to take that assholishness and compress it a bit so we have a safer operation. Still the same jerk, but they can't just do everything.
They can't hurt you anymore. But how about this? Most people don't have jobs like we did. Most people are sitting in an office or working next to somebody who just irritates the shit out of them. And it makes them so they are miserable, don't even want to go to work. I do have an answer how to deal with them. And it most of the time works.
What's that?
Be really nice to them. Because a-holes can't deal with people being nice. They can deal with you being an a-hole because that's their league. That's their game. But if you make an effort to really continuously be nice to somebody, it's hard even for an a-hole to grab on something to be an a-hole about.
Yeah. You know, it may be harder for a-holes now, too, because coming out of this pandemic, there's a lot of work that was being done at home where people didn't need to really be anywhere. They were just needed to be in front of a Zoom or a camera, and they're working remotely. And I guess you can have, you know, jerks online here and there. But if you can just click them off or put them on mute, that takes away a lot of their power, I would say. Imagine you're boxing Mike Tyson. He throws a punch, and you can just, like, freeze the punch if you want to.
Yep.
I was like, okay.
You know, there's a different world with social media, and people are putting their lives out there for other people to attack. My son-in-law, who I call my son, Nicky, is an agent, and he has basketball players. And I told him, man, the first thing I tell him is stay off social media or have somebody strictly do it for them. Mm-hmm. Because, you know the old Navy saying, you can build 1,000 bridges, but do one thing. What will they call you, a bridge builder or one thing? Switching topics quick, would you feel good making a lot of money with a known donut shop that you knew really hurt people's health? So I'm not going to say the name because maybe, no, not maybe. We will have more viewers and listeners one day. So I don't want to get us in trouble.
That's right.
So if you are a famous, because I know of a famous donut shop, if I put it in the town that I live in, I'd make millions. Good giving sugar to children, to obese people, to sick people, would I feel good about doing that? And the answer is no for me.
No, I mean, any kind of junk food, fast food that you know hurts people, there are people already messed up. Why mess them up more? Unless you just want the money. You're kind of a food drug dealer in that case.
Right.
You know, it's bad.
Remember we were talking about Ricky Williams?
Yes.
This is God's honest truth. They did a CBS 60 Minutes on him. Mm-hmm. And once again, the reporter, remember I told you he was shy, but they're trying to dig into him. And he was one of the nicest guys you could ever, ever meet. Mm-hmm. Paul, he was one of those guys that you'd leave your kids with after 15 minutes of meeting him. Mm-hmm. It's like, damn, he's nice. Anyway, the reporter was asking him, trying to dig. And they were talking about his marijuana use. And they asked him, what other drugs have you used? Have you used anything harder? And he put his head down. He said, yes, I have. You should have seen the excitement in her eyes. She's like, what? What else have you done? And he looked right in her face and said, I eat white sugar sometimes. She said, what? I eat sugar. And no, but hard drugs. He said, mm-hmm. That's the hardest drug that you can have. And you know what? It's known to be right. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I couldn't do it. I can't make profit. I can't profit off of doing wrong. Because the third fact in life, everything you do comes back to you. You got a wingman story for me, brother?
Yeah, it was one I heard. I was listening to yesterday while I was pressure washing my driveway. And there was this radio talk show host I listened to. And she was interviewing a guy that was talking about, he's a college professor, advocating the use of psychotropic drugs. Oh, that's a white word.
LSD?
Yeah, it wasn't LSD. It's a bunch of other stuff. I forgot. These exotic things are found in the rainforest.
Shamans use them. It puts you on an LSD type.
Okay. Trip. Yeah. Well, he was talking about basically a widespread use of it. And he's, he makes a case on how it helps and things like that, but advocating it for everyone. And someone called and said, how can you say that? He was a professor at a prestigious university in New York City. And she said, how can you advocate something like this for children? The kids are screwed up enough as they are. And that caught my attention. And I think she was kind of a wingman because most of the other callers were, I guess they're screaming, they're supporting this and that. But you've already got a lot of people who are on all kinds of drugs here, who are doing all kinds of crazy things, rooting, tooting, they're shooting all over the place. It seems like we're always under the influence. Every time I wake up, there's all these shootings around these roadways. When I came back from your home a few days ago, we passed by an area we passed by all the time. Two people were killed there. They were just driving, shot them, and they careened off the road right at the exit that I go to the Jamaican restaurant. Mm. They thought it was a road rage thing. And there's all kinds of shootings in the metro area where people are being killed.
Miami Vice? What about Miami Vice?
Oh, in Miami where they gang thing, the three people, they shot 20 people, killed two or three.
And in 6 seconds.
With long guns, yeah. And that's all over the country.
Automatics, with AKs and MAC-10s and anything, submachine guns, basically. They ran out of the car. The video is they ran out of the car. In 6 seconds, they got back and they shot 26 people, I think, two died.
How about mini Miami Vice, where was in Volusia County, Florida? We had these two kids. One was 12, one was 14. The 14-year-old was a girl. The 12-year-old was a boy. They ran away from some church youth home and they broke into a home that had weapons. Nobody was there. The cops knew they were broke. They broke in. They're trying to get them out. They have a shootout with the police. They shot the girl twice. They had AK-47s. They loaded them and shotguns. The boy surrendered. They found out the 14-year-old had a history of problems. She had burned down a home that she was assigned in before. These are some rough kids, 12 and 14. And the deputy said they were lucky they weren't killed.
Very.
Apparently they were these kids were pretty good. He said, we're lucky we didn't lose any deputies that night. He said, we were almost taken out by 12 and 14-year-olds.
The one thing in common, Paul, that they all have, all the shootings, is there's something mentally wrong with a lot of people and they can't get help and we can't put our finger on them to get them help. There's a common thread in all of them. And there are ways of helping these kind of people. But it's so much easier to categorize them as black or white or Aryan or non-Aryan or gangster or whatever you want to label them, that's so much easier rather than mentally deficient, actually have mental problems that can and need to be corrected, and they need to be off the streets.
It's all there. I mean, what about the fireman, and was it Los Angeles? The off-duty fireman came in, shot up a couple people in the firehouse, killed one guy in the firehouse, wounded a captain, went to his own home. He set fire to the fire station somehow, went to his own home. I think he set fire to his home and then killed himself. Kind of similar to the guy in San Jose. You know, it follows on what you just said.
Well, this is perfect. The perfect ending for us, that wingman perfect, is you need to start being around people that are good people. You need to have people who watch your back. There are unforeseen circumstances like driving and just getting shot that we can't really help. But you can help yourself by being around good people and not being in certain areas at certain times. You're just putting the odds up of getting shot. But yeah, we really need to do something in this country about that. And Paul, we are trying right now. We're trying to do something. I love you, Paul. Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks for having me on. And ladies and gentlemen, please remember to like, share, and subscribe. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that thumbs up button. We'd appreciate it.
100%. We hope you enjoyed our show. We truly thank you for your time. It's our most valuable commodity. So we're still floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Rumble, you badass jet pilots, rumble. Dr. Paul Thompson, Drew Brown, we both say goodbye. See you guys later.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.